with me, please, to Deuteronomy chapter 20 for our second reading. Chapter 20, verse 1. Hear now, stop giggling out there. Hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired word of God. When thou goest out to battle against thine enemies, and seest horses and chariots, and a people more than thou, be not afraid of them. For the Lord thy God is with thee, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. And it shall be, when ye are come nigh unto the battle, that the priest shall approach and speak unto the people, and shall say unto them, Hear, O Israel, ye approach this day unto battle against your enemies. Let not your hearts faint, fear not, and do not tremble, neither be ye terrified because of them. For the Lord your God is he that goeth with you to fight for you against your enemies to save you. And the officers shall speak unto the people, saying, What man is there that hath built a new house and hath not dedicated it? Let him go and return to his house, lest he die in the battle and another man dedicate it. And what man is he that hath planted a vineyard and hath not yet eaten of it? Let him also go and return unto his house, lest he die in the battle and another man eat of it. And what man is there that hath betrothed a wife and hath not taken her? Let him go and return unto his house, lest he die in the battle, and another man take her. And the officers shall speak further unto the people, and they shall say, What man is there that is fearful and faint-hearted? Let him go and return to his house, lest his brethren's heart faint as well as his heart. And it shall be, when the officers have made an end of speaking unto the people, that they shall make captains of the armies to lead the people. When thou comest nigh unto a city to fight against it, then proclaim peace unto it. And it shall be, if it make thee answer of peace, and open unto thee, then it shall be that all the people that is found therein shall be tributaries unto thee, and they shall serve thee. And if it will make no peace with thee, but will make war against thee, then thou shalt besiege it. And when the Lord thy God hath delivered it into thy hands, thou shalt smite every male thereof with the edge of the sword. But the women and the little ones and the cattle and all that is in the city, even all the spoil thereof, shalt thou take unto thyself, and thou shalt eat the spoil of thine enemies, which the Lord thy God hath given thee. Thus shalt thou do unto all the cities which are very far off from thee, which are not of the cities of these nations, but of the cities of these people, which the Lord thy God doth give thee for an inheritance, thou shalt save alive nothing that breatheth. But thou shalt utterly destroy them, namely, the Hittites and the Amorites, the Canaanites and the Perizzites, the Hivites and the Jebusites, as the Lord thy God hath commanded thee, that they teach you not to do after all their abominations, which they have done unto their gods, so should ye sin against the Lord your God. When thou shalt besiege a city a long time, in making war against it to take it, thou shalt not destroy the trees thereof by forcing an axe against them, for thou mayest eat of them. And thou shalt not cut them down, for the tree of the field is a man's life, to employ them in the siege. Only the trees which thou knowest that they be not trees for meat, thou shalt destroy and cut them down, and thou shalt build bulwarks against the city that maketh war with thee until it be subdued. May God add his blessing to the reading and to the hearing of his most holy word. The first section that I have is 1 through 9. It is a very interesting section. First of all, the Levites are commanded to come forth and to address the people. The Levites. Who are the Levites? Remember, they are the pastors and the teachers in the church of that day. And so when they come out, what are they supposed to do? They are to encourage the people against their enemies, to remind them of what the Lord did to Egypt on their behalf, so that they might take good courage in coming forth against their enemies today. And so they are to speak to them in the name of the Lord, the great and merciful acts of God in time past, so that they might take courage in them for today. The Levites. Then after the Levites have made their address, then come the officers of the army. And this is a very interesting section, and I think there are several things implied here that are more or less explicit throughout the section. So the officers come forth and they say, okay, who's here that's just built a house and hasn't been able to live in it yet? You go home and live in your house. Which one of you has planted a field, a vineyard, and has not yet eaten of the fruit of it? Go and eat the fruit of your vineyard. Who's married a wife and not yet taken her to wed? Who has betrothed the wife, and not yet taken her to wed? You go do that, lest you die in battle and another man take her. Notice what is said here. First of all, the first thing that is said is, do not minimize the possibility of casualty. Right? That's the first thing. We are setting about here, these officers are to tell the people, we are setting about here to what the soldiers during the war between the states would call a manly work. We have a manly work to do today. As a matter of fact, very often the captains would call the men together before they went out into the battlefield and to pray for the prospective widows. They understood that they were not about to undertake something that was not fraught with danger and would indeed result in great casualty. Notice here that that these captains are not to minimize the strong possibility of casualties in the battle. Even though the Lord has promised them the victory, He has not promised them victory without casualty. As a matter of fact, we remember in the book of Judges, there's one time when the army goes out, they come back, nothing, not one man was lost, and they offer a special offering unto the Lord for that great blessing. So that's the first thing. But the second thing is, doesn't this, on a cursory reading, and I think it must be a cursory reading, doesn't this seem like, just everybody's going to be going home? Because, I've built a house, you bet, and I've got a wife, and I've got a vineyard, and, this is a manly business we're about to set out here to do, and I don't know, I've got this other stuff back home, and I'm pretty much tied up with that, and so can I go home too? And the captains are to tell them to go. Do you think that was for their benefit? See, I don't think so. I think that was for the benefit of the army itself. And I think this is made explicit in the next section, where toward the end of this section, notice what it says in verse 8. And the officers shall speak further unto the people, and they shall say, what man is there that is fearful and faint-hearted? Let him go and return to his house, lest his brethren's heart faint as well as his heart. Do you understand what's going on here now? What's going on here is, it is not for those men that they're being sent back from the battle. It is that they would be so distracted with the concerns of their other life apart from their soldiering that they would not be able to apply themselves rightly to the battle further. They would be a discouragement to their brethren in that distraction and a temptation to that same kind of distraction on their behalf. And so they must not be allowed to stay in the army because they would harm the general morale of the troops. Now that's a really, really important principle that is often lost on the army of God today, the church. We must remember our dear brothers and sisters, or my dear brothers and sisters, we must remember our dear brothers and sisters that we do not discourage their hearts in following Christ. And we must be very careful when we do this, because it is not difficult to discourage our brethren in their walk and obedience to Christ. Sometimes a complaint, a murmur, a word unfitly spoken, a little bit of gossip, a little bit of slander, a little bit of questioning, out of station. And what do we end up with? we end up with the army being discouraged and becoming ineffectual in the battle, ineffectual in its mission. And so we must be very careful. We must be very careful not to discourage the hearts of our brethren from following after Christ, from hearing Him, from getting in line behind those whom Christ has put in charge of His army, that we move forward together. And so that is why the end of that section, it shall be then that his brethren's heart faint as well as his heart. This is a very, it's pastoral, it's spiritual, it's not particularly tangible. It is one of those intangible things, and yet you can see it after it takes place. You may not know it when it's happening, but you can certainly see it after it takes place in the drawing off of the heart, in the drawing off of the affections, in the drawing off of the commitment, in the questioning, and so on. And there have been things that have happened in our own history as a church and before. And you've heard me say this before, that when great disruptions take place in the church, that people begin to question things that ought not ever to have been questioned. And commitments tend to fall by the boards. And let us be careful then, in everything that we do, not to discourage the heart of our brethren in their walk with the Lord. And this includes, how we attend catechism class, how we attend worship services. It includes so many different things. And all of those things, as they contribute to the general morale of a church, to the encouragement or discouragement of a church, whether we are easing and facilitating obedience among our beloved members, or whether we are throwing hindrances to those things instead. All of that plays into the same principle that is set forth here in the going forth of the armies. Now, notice that after everybody was sent home that was going home, what happens then? Then we have this last statement in that section, in verse 9, "And it shall be, when the officers have made an end of speaking unto the people, that they shall make captains of the armies to lead the people." And so notice that it is not reason, it is not right, it is not just, it is certainly not wise, that you should take leaders of the people out of those who would discourage the people. That would be even worse. That would make that even more troublesome. And so they're only to choose out the leadership for the army after the faint-hearted have been sent home. All right, so then the second section has to do with how they are to make war against two different kinds of cities. The first kind of city is not within those seven Canaanite nations. And there's one mode of battle for those outside those seven Canaanite nations, and another mode of battle for those inside. Outside, the first thing that they are to do is what? Sue for peace. Sue for peace. There should be no unnecessary spilling of blood. This has always been the principle of what some of our ancient theologians have called just war, right? Going back to Augustine and before that. The theory of just war is defensive and necessary. Notice they come up against this nation or this city. It's a walled city, fortified. They knock on the door, knock on the gate. We are the Israelites. You've heard of us, maybe. We are advancing the kingdom of Israel and the religion of Yahweh. What say you? Would you have peace or would you have war? Remember that the Lord gave them from the Mediterranean Sea to the river Euphrates. And so the Israelites would say, what will you have? Would you have peace or would you have war? If you have peace, you will become our tributaries. That is, that you will pay taxes to Israel. And you will abide by the laws of God as we set them out before you. If they would not have that, then they were to conquer that city. But they were to sue for peace first. just and necessary, and defensive war. Those are the tenets of the just war theory. And then with regard to the nations within the land of Canaan, that was a special historical circumstance. Remember that they were the usurpers. Canaan's people, the grandson of Noah, were to remain in Africa. They did not. They went into the land that was promised to Shem and his people. And the Lord says, we're going to put that back where it belongs. And so you will not make any treaties with them. You will tear their cities down, and you will not leave anything alive that breathes. Because if you do, they will draw you off from worshiping the Lord. Now, we must understand that this was not an absolute commandment, that there were certain exceptions to it. Can you think of an exception right off the top of your head? Rahab. Not only Rahab, but Rahab and her house, so honorable that she's only one of two women that are found in the genealogy of Jesus Christ. So Rahab receives a very honored place in history, even though she was a Canaanite woman, because she came to faith in Yahweh. She had the faith that worked by love, as James describes it in Paul. So, thus ends the reading then of Deuteronomy chapter 20. Let's continue praising God in the singing of songs.